thanks, Chong, for inviting me, and it's my pleasure to come to PI again. And so today I'm going to share some of our research in this direction. I first want to acknowledge my collaborators, my two students, Dachuan Lu and Meng Zeng. They are in San Diego, and Dachuan is going to find a postdoc position next year, so keep an eye on that, and he's very good. And then Zhuwen is my long-term collaborator, also a good friend at Harvard. So these are the two papers related to today's talk. So the talk is about Fermi liquids. So Fermi liquids are gapless phase of matter in fermion systems, and it basically is some fermion with well-defined Fermi surface and well-defined quasi-particle excitations at low energy. It basically describes the state of electron in normal state of most materials, actually most metals, at low temperature. And despite of the long history of studying it, it has become the standard topic in solid state physics, but there are still many interesting physics to explore, I think. And there's actually some renewed interest in these systems because of the question, what is protecting the gapless fermions on the Fermi surface? So there is a recent trend in condensed matter theory, try to understand all gapless quantum phase of matter from the perspective of emergent symmetry and the quantum anomaly associated with this emergent symmetry. And one very famous example is the confined quantum criticality, which is actually a phenomenon in a quantum magnet in a spin system, where you can have two different symmetry breaking phase separated by a critical point. And the critical, at the critical point, there's a lot of gapless critical fluctuations. And it is found that this critical point has an enlarged SO5 symmetry. And because the anomaly in this SO5 symmetry, that it protects this gaplessness. So the same idea actually recently being explored and try to apply this kind of line of thinking to understand Fermi liquids. So if you look at the effective theory of a Fermi liquid at low low energy, which is described by the Landau Fermi liquid theory, its Hamiltonian has the form like this. And if you look at it, it's all written in terms of the density operator at different momentum points. And then given that, this Hamiltonian commutes with all the density operator at all different momentum points, that indicates that it seems that you can do independent phase rotation of the fermion field at different momentum points on the Fermi surface. So that is what is said to be more precisely the loop U1 symmetry proposed in these papers. And then if you want to, it is also consider that there's an anomaly associated with this loop U1 symmetry that actually protects the gaplessness. So the way that we understand the anomaly in condensed matter physics, there's another way of thinking that is through the bulk boundary correspondence that's related to SPT order. So the idea is that you can always think a system with quantum anomaly as the boundary of some bulk systems. While the bulk systems will have symmetry protected topological order to source the anomaly in some sense. So if we say that the Fermi surface is a system that has anomaly of loop U1 symmetry, let's say, and then you may wonder whether I can view the Fermi surface as a boundary of some bulk system. And if you ask any undergraduate who take the solid state physics class, what is the bulk of a Fermi surface? Then the student will answer that is the Fermi C, and that's very convention because that's how Fermi surface was defined. So then what is topological, what is SPT about the Fermi C? Actually, that's the question, and how to understand the Fermi surface anomaly from this SPT order in the Fermi C. That's what we wish to answer. And then indeed, this question has been answered in a paper by Xiao Liang and collaborators a long time ago, that they propose that the Fermi C can actually be viewed as a Chern insulator in the phase space. So it's a SPT state not defined in the conventional space-time, but defined in the phase space. Phase space is the space spanned by position and momentum. So this is the outline of the talk today. I try to say that Fermi surface is an anomalous system which is defined in a d-dimensional space and the d-1 dimensional momentum, because if you have a d-dimensional space, the momentum space is also d-dimension, but Fermi surface as a co-dimensional one surface, it has a d-1 dimension in the momentum space and has one dimension in the time direction. But then it should have a bulk theory. The bulk theory is the Fermi C, which is defined in the d-dimensional space, d-dimensional momentum, d-dimensional real space, d-dimensional momentum space, and time. But in terms of classifying these SPT states, we actually, what we found in our research is that we really need to map this problem to a 0 plus 1D fermion SPT classification problem. So the effective dimension in classifying these SPT states is actually D minus D plus 1. So in that sense, momentum space dimension actually serves as a negative dimension for classification purpose. So that is the key finding of our research. And our research, I shouldn't claim too much novelty. It's essentially a combination of all the previous works, but we just patch them together and try to come up with a story and try to generalize this notion to general groups, defining Fermi surface anomaly for general groups. So I think the central concept here is the idea of phase-based Chern insulator. Okay, so to start, let me first try to tell you why the Fermi surface is related or can be viewed, or the Fermi C can be viewed as the Fermi as a phase-based Chern insulator. So let's start from a very simple toy example in 1 plus 1D. If you consider a 1D Fermi liquid, which is described by, let's say, free fermion system described by a Hamiltonian, this is the band structure. And then if you plot the band structure as a function, energy as a function of momentum, it has some curvature, it has some curve there, and then it intersects with the Fermi surface at two points, which is known as the Fermi momentum, Kf and minus Kf. And near the two points, you can linearize the dispersion relation and say that there's chiral fermion moving towards right and towards left at these two momentum points. So this is the momentum energy space picture of Fermi liquid. But you can translate that picture into the phase space. So phase space is the space which is spanned by the position coordinate and the momentum coordinate. And then you want to have fermion occupying the phase space to describe this system. And you can ask, which region does the fermion occupy? Of course, it occupies in the momentum space from minus Kf to Kf. It also occupies throughout the full real space, assuming that the system is infinitely large. But then if you look at what are these low energy modes, you have a right moving chiral fermion mode moving along the positive x direction near Kf, and you have a left moving mode near minus Kf. But if you stare at this picture long enough, you will realize that it is a fermion occupying a two-dimensional strip where you have chiral edge modes, right? So in that sense, you will say, oh, this is a Chern insulator, but it's a Chern insulator with this chiral edge mode, but defined in the phase space that is spanned by position and momentum. So in that sense, Fermi liquid can be viewed as a Chern insulator in the phase space. And that analogy actually generalized to higher dimension, as I will mention very soon. Yes. Yes, yes. The Chern number, depends on the number of flavors of fermion, basically. Yeah, you can view in that way. For example, if you have spin degeneracy, then you can probably say it's a Chern number 2 Chern insulator with two edge modes, let's say, something like that. Yeah. So,
I have a question.
Yeah.
So, can you go back to your slides?
Yes. Which one? The previous
one? Yeah.
Okay.
So, it seems like you want to combine real space and momentum space.
Yes.
But I thought that, like, in terms of classification of electron insulator, it's free from the laws.
Yeah.
Yes. So how are you overcalculating?
I'm going to use that, actually.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm going to use that conclusion. That is why. If you have a SPT state only in the real space, your classification dimension is actually D plus 1. And if you have a Chern insulator only defined in the momentum space, the classification dimension by this mapping is minus D plus 1. But if you have an insulator defined both in the real space and the momentum space, it's D minus D plus 1. I'm going to use that, yeah. Yeah. So it's...
How do you think about
the Yes, then this D will be some D minus the co-dimension. Yeah, co-dimension.
So it's mixed in your...
Yeah, you can mix it. You can generalize to wireless semi-metal as well. But yeah, for now, at the first part of my talk, I will only talk about cold dimension one Fermi surface, which is, Okay, so that's the understanding. And, That's very good. I don't know how to do that. It seems that it's possible to generalize along that direction, but I don't know how to make sense of that yet. Probably the edge mode will correspond to some some chiral Luttinger liquid with beyond free fermion, something like that. But we haven't explored that. But anyway, for now, I think what I'm going to say is that if we restrict to free fermion systems and it maps to this Chern insulator in the phase space. And our goal is try to write down a few theory description for this Chern insulator in the phase space. But in order to do that, let's look at how can we write down a Chern insulator field theory description in the real space. In the real space, a Chern insulator is a 2+1 dimensional system. So it has two spatial dimensions and it has a Hamiltonian. And you can use a massive Dirac fermion to describe the low energy freedom of a Chern insulator by opening up this gap. And then this Hamiltonian describes some fermion field defined at each point, and this mass has a profile. And mass less than zero means that you are in the bulk. Mass greater than zero means that you are out of the bulk. And then there's a mass domain wall on the boundary of the Chern insulator, and that's why this boundary traps chiral fermion modes. So that's all we know. So then you say, okay, Chern insulator in the phase space, now what we do is we just take this real space Hamiltonian, and then we reinterpret this partial y, the y dimension, as my momentum dimension. And I keep all the Pauli matrices the same, and I just phenomenologically or formally write down a field theory like that. And then I say, okay, I need to define my fermion field at each point of position and momentum, but hey, wait. Position and momentum don't commute with each other, right? You can't really label a field by two coordinates which don't commute with each other. So that is the difficulty we encounter immediately when we try to generalize the notion of Chern insulator into the phase space. That is, this quantum mechanics tells us that the phase space coordinates, position and momentum, they have a non-commutativity. And then that means the phase space is a non-commutative manifold. And then the Dirac fermion actually is defined on a non-commutative manifold. It's a non-commutative field theory. And then there's many different ways to deal with that non-commutativity. Some of the ideas is from these papers, Moya product, that if your underlying manifold has non-commutative coordinates, depending on the non-commutativity, and then you can redefine the product of two fields in certain ways. But this is more like a perturbative treatment of the non-commutativity because it expands around the commutative limit, and then it is assuming that this theta is small. However, in quantum mechanics, this theta is not small. It's almost like order one thing. So we need non-perturbative treatment, but there's also ways to do that. I think there are at least two ways to resolve the non-commutative geometry. One is by introduce a phase-space Berry curvature, meaning that you imagine that there is a magnetic field, uniform magnetic field through the XK plane, such that the field strength goes like F equals dA equals dx wedge dk, such that it is actually placing the fermion in a Landau level, such that the x and k is like the two coordinates of a fermions in the Landau level that they don't commute in that sense. And then there's another way that we are even more familiar, that is in quantum mechanics, you can have canonical quantization by representing k as the gradient of x and x as the gradient of k with respect to each other. They are due to each other. So basically, in the following, I will use both of the approach, try to make sense of the field theory. And then, given that setup, let's try to first argue why this phase space Chern insulator is a legitimate understanding of the Fermi surface, in the sense that if I try to compute the topological bulk response theory from this Chern insulator in the phase space, I can somehow reproduce the loop U1 anomaly on the Fermi surface. And then the idea is that if we take the first approach to resolve the Berry curvature, to resolve the non-commutativity by introduce Berry curvature in the phase space, then the idea is that I start from a fermion theory, and then I replace every partial by this covariant derivative, which I introduce this background gauge connection. And this connection is defined in the phase space in both coordinate momentum and time as well. So in that sense. So then this theory should also come with a background curvature. And also this theory, this mass term also has a mass profile that tells you which part is within the Fermi C and which part is outside the Fermi C depending on the sign of this mass. So basically that is the theoretical description of a phase-based Chern insulator that describes the Fermi liquid. So now with this background curvature, X and K can now be treated as ordinary commuting coordinate. You don't need to worry about it now, yeah.
Sorry, I'm confused by basic one.
Yeah.
So if this meets the phase space Dirac Hamiltonian, how does unit work?
How does
unit position derivative and momentum derivative seems to have different units?
Oh. Yeah, you just take a H bar, you set H bar to 1 and that sets the unit. The difference between momentum and coordinate unit is H bar because X and K commutate to H bar, right? Yeah. It's I think it's fine. Yeah. Yeah, you just treat that as unit order one. It doesn't carry unit, yeah.
So you're assuming things.
You need to assume, basically means you need to assume a length scale. And then inverse length scale is the unit of momentum. Length scale is the unit. But that length scale is chosen arbitrarily. Yeah.
I mean, in this present context, you have right?
Yeah, if necessary, you put any constant here to compensate the unit. Yeah. Okay, so essentially, you put the Fermi velocity here to compensate the unit, something like that. Okay, so with this setup, you can try to derive, you can try to integrate out the fermion field because now in this theory, X and K are just ordinary coordinates and they are treated as commuting with each other. So you can do the field path integral normally, integrate out the fermion field, and obtain the Chern-Simons effective field theory for the gauge connection. But now, if you take this theory, recall that the gauge field has a uniform background in the XK plane, so you can actually try to compute the fermion filling. So you can take this action and then take the variance with respect to A0, which calculates the density of the fermion, and you can show that this basically converts into an integration of F in the XK plane, because in the XK plane there's some unit magnetic field background, and then also because when you do the integration over K, you integrate only from minus KF to KF, so that basically pick up the Fermi volume. So this shows that charge density actually is proportional to the Fermi volume, and that is nothing but the Luttinger theorem. So essentially, this Chern-Simons theory, the topological response of this phase-based Chern insulator, is just faithfully reproduce the Luttinger theorem as its response theory. So that is the smoking gun kind of response for Fermi liquid. So in that sense, the bulk response matches the Fermi liquid. And we can also try to argue from another perspective that not only the bulk response matches what we should expect from the Fermi liquid, and the topological edge mode also matches. If you have a phase-based Chern insulator, it has some boundary in the phase space. And then we can try to ask what are the edge modes on this boundary as a topological insulator, right? So the way to compute the boundary mode is you start from a Hamiltonian like that, and then you can consider there's mass domain wall in these two kink and anti-kink. So at this mass domain wall, if you look at this term, by solving the differential equation there, you can find localized zero energy eigenmodes there. So if you focus on these low energy modes near the kink and anti-kink, these modes are labeled by eigenvalue of sigma x operator equals either minus 1 and plus 1. So near these modes, basically the remaining term in the Hamiltonian is the first term, and then if you substitute this eigenvalue of sigma x into this term, then the effective low energy Hamiltonian near the edge mode, near the boundary, near this mass domain wall, is the right moving fermion, and this is the Hamiltonian describing the left moving fermion. So exactly this theory can reproduce the left and right moving fermion as its edge modes at momentum kf and minus kf. So that precisely matches what we should expect from a 1 plus 1D Fermi liquid low energy gapless fermion modes. So, yeah.
Yes.
Maybe it's not equivalent in terms of the UV theory, in terms of box theory, but it's equivalent in terms of this IR, low energy theory. The low energy theory is the same.
Can this be translated to A?
I don't think it can be translated because I don't even know what's the meaning of this two component fermion, right? If you have a epsilon K, it only has a single component of fermion, but in this theory, your fermion field has two components. That's mysterious. Yeah. Yeah. Yes? Yeah, the symplectic form basically is encoded in the X and K commutator, and this U1 gauge field just correctly reproduced that commutator. I think that's sufficient. We are not trying to gauging on the geometry level, not trying to do a gravity theory in that sense. We're trying to use U1 curvature to resolve that non-commutativity. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Everywhere or? You can tune M to zero. You need this M to be non-zero almost everywhere, such that that's the bulk theory. That's a bulk regularization. You need a gap everywhere.
I want to talk about what can happen in this space, and I just learned about such a theory where M zero is something
like. M zero is more like a phase transition, right?
Yeah. Basically, I talk about scaling dimensions of S and K.
Yeah, it's very subtle. I don't know how to do RG for this theory, I think. I don't know how to correctly scale that. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's related to that dimensionality problem. But fortunately, now the theory in the bulk is fully gapped, so we don't worry about that. All the gapless features are on the boundary. I'm just saying this theory on the boundary reproduce Fermi liquid. I'm not saying this theory in any case is related to Fermi liquid. Yeah. Okay, so we are just trying to provide a boundary bulk regularization of the Fermi surface in terms of phase-based chain insulator, and that analogy basically generalized to any dimensions. If you go to higher dimensions, you can imagine that, for example, if you have a two-dimensional Fermi C with one-dimensional Fermi surface, then the corresponding phase space and time is 2 plus 2 plus 1, is five-dimensional phase space and the time, and then the bulk Chern Simons theory will just be this ADADA, which is actually proposed in many of the recent works, and it also generalized to a higher dimension. So based on that kind of setup, we basically also try to write down a fermion description of this Chern Simons theory. So I should say this Chern Simons theory has been proposed there in the literature. What we are doing is we just try to find a fermion bulk regularization to reproduce this Chern Simons response. And then the fermion theory has to be written in the phase space and with a mass profile, which is less than zero inside the bulk and greater than zero outside the bulk. And this will nicely reproduce all the Chern Simons response that was supposed to describe the topological response of Fermi liquid. And not only that, you can show that with this phase-based topological or chain insulator theory, you can try to compute its edge modes And if you pick a point on the Fermi surface, let's say if I pick this point along the K1 direction on the Fermi surface, then near this point, I have a domain wall, mass domain wall along the K1 direction. So that will localize a zero mole in that that direction, and the zero mole will be in the eigenspace of this matrix gamma 2, gamma 0, I gamma 2, gamma 0 equals 1. And then we can, the remaining theory is our effective theory. But the remaining theory still look complicated. And you can use another trick that we introduce is a canonical quantization. For this term remaining in your theory, you can replace this gradient of K2 by X2 because of the non-commutativity between X2 and K2. So that creates another mass domain wall, and then you can further do domain wall dimension reduction. So by doing that, eventually you can show that it all the way reduced down to a single fermion mode propagating along the X1 direction, which is the normal direction of the Fermi surface at that point. And then we can do more general calculation to show that actually any...
So for...
Yeah.
I go one side back.
Yeah.
So for this one, can you also get the curvature term?
Yeah, I guess if you need to expand to a higher order or something.
Okay.
And try to... We haven't tried to do that yet. We just do that at the linear order, the leading order term, that you can show that the fermion indeed propagates along the normal direction of the Fermi surface. This is can be achieved by domain wall fermion mode reduction. And then this proves that the boundary modes of this phase-based chain insulator indeed is also the directional chiral fermion modes on the Fermi surface. So this also yeah.
Yeah.
So in this example, I'm picking a very special point. I'm sitting at this point on the Fermi surface, and then I'm showing how the algebra goes. But then you need to redo this kind of algebra if you choose another point on the Fermi surface. And that is down in our paper, so I don't want to show the detail here. So Hamiltonian will be a summation of the theta angle that parameterizes all the points on the Fermi surface. So I can just choose one theta to show you that the algebra works. And then if you go to another theta, I can do this calculation again and show you it also works there. And so it works everywhere. Hamiltonian will be a sum of all these modes. Yeah. So I'm just showing that at every point on the Fermi surface, there is one chiral mode, and the Hamiltonian eventually is a summation of all the KF on the Fermi surface of all these chiral modes. Yeah. So this precisely matches what we expect as a low energy freedom for the Fermi liquid. And that's, I think it's an alternative UV regularization of the Landau level wild fermion proposed by Chong. Yeah. So. So this is the this hopefully this tells you convince you that the phase-based chain insulator describes the bulk of a Fermi liquid or of a Fermi surface. So now our goal is try to classify the anomaly associated with the Fermi surface by classifying SPT order of the phase-based chain insulator. So that's we are going towards that direction. So in this case, I want to show you an example that if we take this picture, and then if we consider a two-dimensional Fermi C with a one-dimensional Fermi surface like that, then if you try to count the dimension, the phase-space-time dimension is like a two-dimensional real space, two-dimensional momentum space, and one-dimensional time, so it's five-dimensional kind of space-time, then the bulk is like a 4 plus 1D chain insulator, and then the boundary is like a 3 plus 1D wild fermion, then the Fermi surface anomaly is like the chiral anomaly of wild fermion, which is Z-classified under U1 symmetry. But these are all we know. But what about if I break the U1 symmetry down to Z4, down to its Z4 subgroup? It is known that the Z4 symmetric wild fermion has a non-perturbative anomaly that is Z16 classified, that the wild fermion can only be trivialized by interaction. Trivialized meaning that you can deform it into product state by interaction if it is of multiple 16. So you may say, okay, so if two-dimensional Fermi liquid can be viewed as a four-dimensional quantum Hall insulator in the phase space and has a 3 plus 1D wild fermion as its boundary, then should it also have an anomaly classification which matches Z16 under the Z4 symmetry? It turns out this argument is wrong. So if you just follow this argument, it seems to indicate that the Z4 symmetric Fermi surface in a 2 plus 1D Fermi liquid can only be symmetrically gapped into a product state if you have multiple of 16 Fermi surface. But we know this is not the right statement because the correct statement is this Z4, not this 16. Because I can construct an explicit counterexample to show that you only need four copies of the Fermi surface in order to trivialize the Fermi surface. And the Hamiltonian of that counterexample is very simple. You start from some hopping term in the two plus one dimensional space-time, like a 2D system. In general, this hopping term, without fine-tuning, will produce a Fermi liquid. So if your interaction strength is weak, that basically describes Fermi liquid, with fourfold Fermi surface, because now I consider on every side, I have four fermion flavor. But now I can add a four fermion interaction to the system without breaking the Z4 symmetry. Remember that the Z4 symmetry is the symmetry that is a Z4 subgroup of U1. So these four fermions multiplied together actually preserve the Z4 symmetry. So this is a symmetry allowed interaction that you can apply on every site. But if this interaction is strong enough in the strong interaction limit, you can ignore the hopping term and solve the Hamiltonian on every site. And every site, the Hamiltonian is a superposition state of all filled and all empty state. And then the whole ground state of the many-body Hamiltonian is just a product state of that on-site kind of a charge 4E superconducting state. You may say that. And then this is a symmetric gap product state because first of all, it's gapped. Any excitation you try to create will cause energy on that state. And then it's also symmetric. It doesn't break translation symmetry. It doesn't break the Z4 symmetry. So we know that a Z4 symmetric Fermi surface is only Z4 classified because if you have a four flavor or four multiple, I can actually trivialize it into a product state. So the understanding of this higher dimensional chain insulator need a twist. And then the answer should not be 16, but it should be four. So what is going wrong with our dimension counting back then? It is because, yeah.
If you have four copies, like one copy.
Yeah. So what's going wrong with this counting? The counting is that we are trying to count the dimension in the phase space, but we use the real space picture. In the phase space, the dimension of a topological insulator should be counted in a very peculiar way. That is this proposal that you should actually treat momentum dimension as negative dimension. So the problem actually lies on the incorrect dimension counting, that the D plus one dimensional phase space chain insulator really is not a 2D plus one topological state. It's actually a 0 plus 1D topological state. This all comes from the non-commutative nature of the phase space. If you look at the bulk theory again, you have this partial x and partial k. So now, if you use the canonical quantization picture, you can replace all these partial k by x. So that basically means that this Hamiltonian is actually describing a fermion system in the space with a bunch of intersecting domain walls, because every x times this gamma matrix describes a domain wall that is along that direction. Every x corresponds to a domain wall. So if you use this picture, then you can first do some domain wall fermion reduction, and then reduce the problem all the way to this 0 plus 1D core. And at this intersection of the domain wall, the effective theory is only a 0 plus 1D theory. So in order to classify the SPT order of this bulk theory, you need to notice that this bulk theory actually is not a high dimensional bulk theory. It's actually a 0 plus 1D fermion system. So we really need to use the 0 plus 1D SPT classification to classify its SPT order. So the bulk state, so then the bulk state is trivial. In this bulk theory, you can see M serves as the role to tune the topological transition in the bulk. So the bulk state is only trivial. It can be trivialized if these gapless critical points or the gapless critical mode at M equals 0 can be symmetrically gapped by interaction. And indeed, that can be achieved by this four fermion pairing term. And then from that kind of argument, you can show that this bulk theory actually is a Z4 classified given the Z4 symmetry. So that matches, that dimension counting matches what we should expect. So in the end, I think this is the take-home message that we really need to use this effective dimension to compute the phase space, to do the classification of phase space topological topological insulator. Momentum space dimension should be treated as negative dimension. And this is not the first time people come up with this idea. It's very early. Teo and Ken, actually, they first proposed this idea, and then Chao Ming and Chen Ke further generalized this idea to interacting SPT phase, and they show that actually this so-called either momentum or parameter space dimension or synthetic dimension should be treated as negative dimension in terms of classification purpose. So, for example, if I have a D equals 3 dimensional real space, then I can have either Fermi, so assuming U1 symmetry, so let's see what should be the classification. Then if you have a Fermi surface with co-dimension 1, which means you have a two-dimensional Fermi surface in this three-dimensional system, then the Fermi C has a dimension delta equals 3, so that the effective dimension is 0 and classification is Z. But if you go to further, if you now increase the co-dimension, you can talk about Fermi rings. And then you can even talk about wild points. They are just higher and higher co-dimensional Fermi surface, which correspond to lower and lower dimensional Fermi C. So you can use the same formula to compute the effective dimension and use the effective dimension to come up with the classification schemes. So that is consistent with our understanding that the Fermi ring is not stable in three-dimensional materials, but wild point is kind of stable because it has a Z classification. It's perturbative anomaly there. Okay, so
if I consider classification of noise level,
uh-huh.
I guess I cannot apply. What's wrong with that?
You cannot.
Yes, I guess I'm noise level classification.
Yeah, it's very subtle. Then you have to. Usually when we classify fermion SPT, there's no background magnetic field. But now you want to say, okay, I have a fermion SPT state with a background magnetic field. I think it should be reconsidered.
Well, I guess invertible states, they're both classified by Z anyway, right? For you, for 2 plus 1 or 0.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Maybe there is a chance.
Yeah. So for many of the states that's Z classified, you don't see the difference, just like here.
But
so
then if I want to take a class,
I believe so. You have to first do some dimension reduction given by the Landau level, because Landau level, the background magnetic field restrict the motion of fermions, and you have to take that into account. So the effective dimension has to change. I think that should be reconsidered. Yeah.
Maybe one thing I'm a bit confused.
Uh-huh.
Usually, when you classify things, locality is pretty important.
Yeah.
So when you have phase space, is there any good reason to assume locality momentum space? I mean,
no.
Fermion, you have that.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, okay, so that's also a difference between the classification in Landau level where you have locality in both x and y direction. Interaction is local in the real space. But here, interaction is only local in the real space and non-local in the momentum space. So actually, that's why I think this conclusion doesn't immediately apply to Landau level problem yet, because the nature of locality of interaction is different. So here, the reason that this delta should be treated as negative, you may wonder which dimension should I call momentum dimension, which should I call real space. It is precisely defined by the locality of interaction. Those dimensions in which interaction is non-local is called the momentum, and those dimensions which interaction is local is called real space. So that's how you count this delta. Yeah. Yeah, if you don't have interaction, maybe it's not very well defined which is momentum, which is coordinate. And this formula, actually, you don't know what is this delta. You really need a little bit of interaction to tell you which dimension should be treated as a synthetic dimension. Yeah, I think that's the key point of their paper there as well. So, okay. This, the first Z is the conventional wild point, but the second Z, I think it's like a, so you can view this wild point in the Brillouin zone as if you take a two-dimensional surface in the three-dimensional Brillouin zone, it has a non-trivial Chern number and Chern number jump as you pass a wild point, right? So that's like you jump from a trivial insulator to a Chern insulator through the wild point. That's one Z classification. The other Z, I believe, is like EA state. You attach a new EA state.
What does that mean?
I don't know what does that mean in the free fermion language, so I think that is something beyond free fermion. I don't know how to understand that state. Yeah.
It's probably something like you charge 3 well fermion, charge 1 well fermion, and you can probably cook up something that matches that anomaly.
Oh, really? I see. Okay. Okay, yeah, we can maybe think about that more. I don't fully understand. This is the cobordism give us this classification, but we believe one of it is associated with attaching EA states, but it's still mysterious what it really means in the fermion system. But I think the take-home message is that we try to classify this Fermi surface anomaly by mapping it to phase space topological insulators. And in this way, the conclusion is that it matches to an effective dimension classification problem. And then what is the usage of this Fermi surface anomaly classification? Well, it is related to a phenomenon of Fermi surface symmetric mass generation. So this terminology basically means that can you gap out the Fermi surface by interaction effect without spontaneously breaking any symmetry or developing any topological order? Symmetric mass generation means that you generate a gap without any consequence, basically gap the system into product state. And you want to know what is the necessary condition for this kind of phenomenon to happen. Well, the necessary condition is the Fermi surface is free from anomaly. So that's why we need to classify Fermi surface anomaly first and then try to understand when this SMG can happen. So you basically, based on that kind of idea, you can propose some Fermi surface anomaly index, which has to do with the level of the Chern-Simons term, which has to do with the Fermi volume, when this index mod 1 is, it's basically the filling index, in a very complicated way, try to include the charge effect, include a degeneracy effect. But anyway, if you have the integer filling, you cancel the anomaly, and then you can have Fermi surface symmetric mass generation.
Here you're assuming a U1 charge.
Yeah, here if you're assuming a U1 charge, that's the standard formula. But if you're assuming Z4 charge, for example, then the classification is Z4. Then somehow you need to take into account Z4 here. It's like I think in that case, if the level is 4, it is still treated as 0 in some. Yeah. So the classification actually is trying to classify this level. So sometimes a non-trivial level can be trivialized by interaction, for example, if your symmetry is only Z4. So that's a more subtle case, and I don't know how to write down an index for all the cases. I'm just showing the U1 case index, but I think it has some Z4 generalization. Yeah, meaning that for the Z4 case, you don't need to worry about the filling to be integer. Your Fermi volume can be an irrational fraction of the Briançon, but you can still trivialize the system because you know that the level falls into a Z4 classification, that if you have multiplicity 4, then the system can be immediately trivialized by the charge 4e superconducting kind of interaction. So that's another place where Fermi surface SMG can happen. But finally, in the last few minutes, I wish to quickly go through an example. Well, I think it's an interesting model which demonstrates Fermi surface symmetric mass generation. It's a bilayer square lattice model, which I think Subir also talked about that a bit in his Ancilla fermion approach towards pseudo gap physics. But we actually consider even simpler model without all the subtlety of gauge field. We just consider a spin 1/2 fermion on a bilayer square lattice with half filling. And then the Hamiltonian has, in each layer, it has an independent intra-layer hopping of spin 1/2 fermions. And then it is half filling, so the Fermi surface looks like a square shape. It fills half of the Briançon. And then there's no fermion tunneling between the two layers, but there is a coupling of the fermion spin across the two layers such that the coupling favors antiferromagnetic spin singlet kind of state between the fermions across the two layers. So that's my Hamiltonian. And there's no gauge field. There's just everything is just physical fermion. And let's try to understand the phase diagram. If your interaction is small, of course, it's Fermi liquid. And I put a square here just to indicate that it has two copies of the Fermi surface, let's say. And then if your J is very large, then you end up with interlayer singlet state, which is a product state. So we know that this is a gapped symmetric state, and this is a gapless Fermi liquid state. So there must be a phase transition. At least there must be a phase transition, but they can be more, even more than that. It can be intermediate phase. We don't know yet. We have to simulate this problem. But currently, I'm not aware of simulation of these kind of models. But assuming that there is a transition, then the transition itself can be very interesting. And there is some theory by Liu Jun and collaborators and try to describe these similar transitions. But I should say this falls into the context of Fermi surface symmetric mass generation. This is one example of that. And then if you gauge the lower layer fermion, that is closer to this Fermi liquid star phase discussed in Shubia's work. And according to Shubia, this is related to pseudo gap physics. And the idea is that maybe if you don't look at the superconducting phase, somehow if you suppress it, maybe the mother state of the pseudo gap phase to the Fermi liquid has something to do with Fermi surface SMG. So I'm not trying to further discuss this. I'm also not quite expert on that. But what I wish to say is that if such a physics does happen, can we try to figure out some experimental signature? What should be the experimental signature of Fermi surface SMG? And so that's the work we are that's the study we are actually doing. We haven't published it yet, but our strategy is to look into the fermion Green's function, the two-point function, because this is something that's in principle can be measured, because the imaginary part of the Green's function is the spectral function measured by Arpi's experiment, and then you can use KK relation to reconstruct the Green's function from its spectral function. Suppose you have enough resolution and a good quality of data. But anyway, as a theoretical study, we basically try to understand what happens to this Green's function as this Fermi surface undergoes Fermi surface symmetric mass generation. So if you start from a Fermi liquid in a two-dimensional square lattice with this square Fermi surface, so you can plot in the Brillouin zone along these high symmetry points, what is the imaginary part of the Green's function? You can see very nicely that there's a pole along this direction. That means there's a peak of the imaginary part of the Green's function. That's a spectral function. And if you look at the determinant of the Green's function, these poles basically separate the positive determinant from the negative determinant, because across the pole, you have to change the sign of the Green's function. So now, if we suppose we are gapping out the Fermi surface by some symmetry breaking mechanism, let's not worry about symmetric mass generation yet. If I just use ordinary mechanism like SDW, symmetry breaking, then what will happen necessary is that I have to fold the Brillouin zone. Because if I don't want to break the U1 symmetry, I have to break translation symmetry. Otherwise, there's this anomaly kind of requirement. So you necessarily need to have some consequence there. Like you can see, as you can see from the spectral function, that there's obviously folding of Brillouin zone. And in that case, you have some structure of determinant of the Green's function like this. It just follows these poles. But what happens if the fermions are gapped by the symmetric mass generation? So this is what we computed. And then we just can start from the strong strong interacting limit, and then that limit, the ground state, is understood. And then we take hopping as perturbation, and we do a perturbative calculation to calculate this Green's function, and then we plot it. Yeah, so this is the result.
So this is deep in the...
Very, very deep in the SMG phase, yes, yeah. SMG phase in this model is just the interlayer spin singlet product state. I'm talking about this model. And then deep in the SMG phase is large J limit, where the ground state is the product of interlayer singlet. And then I can turn on hopping a little bit, treat that as a perturbation, and try to compute fermion Green's function. Yeah.
In this model, that's the Fermi surface.
At least not in the SMG phase, because in the other side.
Small
in the small, yes, in principle, there can be intermediate symmetry breaking phase because of the nesting, and it has a very strong instability. So it is possible there's no direct transition. But we don't worry about that yet. We are saying what happened in the SMG limit.
I guess adding a second neighbor hopping doesn't really affect it.
Doesn't really affect this physics, but then you can pretty much reduce the nesting.
Sure.
Yeah. So I don't think nesting play any role in this discussion. So because we start from this strong coupling limit, and then it is all controlled by that limit, and then the Green's function has this structure, and you can see this Green's function doesn't have any folding of the Briançon. And then if you look at more carefully, if you look at the determinant of the Green's function, what we can see is that the Green's function will change sign across this green line, which is where the determinant of Green's function becomes zero. So the Green's function actually has zeros along this green line, and the green line crosses the zero frequency at 2 points, and that 2 points was the point where the Fermi surface resides.
So the G12 is non-zero?
Yeah. G12 actually. If 12 correspond to spin, then it's still zero. Yeah. I just use determinant just not to miss any mode. It can be diagonal, and don't worry about this determinant. It's just in order not to miss any mode. Yeah. So that's the idea. Okay, so in the end, I think the take-home message is that SMG is a pole to zero transition. Before the transition, the Fermi surface is governed by a ring of poles, but after the transition, it becomes a ring of zeros. Yeah, that's a quite good question. So I think we shouldn't trust the shape, but maybe the volume should still be there. I have an argument here. It's like this is all coming from this topological response. Because if you believe you are deep in the phase, but you are not so deep that your energy scale is still smaller than so-called bulk regularization scale. Remember, we have this bulk Chern insulator picture that it has a bulk gap. And then we assume that this SMG, although it's deep in the strong interaction limit, but that interaction is also much smaller compared to the bulk gap, such that in the phase space, you still have this bulk Chern insulator. And then this bulk Chern insulator must leave some signature on the boundary. And that zero is the signature coming from the phase space bulk Chern insulator.
It's a misstatement about the
breaking line. In some intermediate regime where the interaction is much larger than the low energy scale but smaller than the bulk regularization.
People were trying to say before that some other state is zero on the boundary.
So in this regime that you didn't touch the bulk theory yet. The bulk theory still the bulk Fermi phase space Fermi phase space Chern insulator still have that volume, still have that shape, assuming that. Then you should have zero surrounding this surface.
So is the volume enclosed by zeros independent of t?
T, what's time?
The hopping.
Yeah. I'm saying that it's kind of topological because as long as your energy scale is less than the so-called effective bulk mass of the phase space.
Volume
yeah.
Enclosed by zero is protected.
Yeah, I believe so, because your phase space, assuming your phase space Chern insulator structure haven't been destroyed by the interaction, then that should be the case. Because as long as the phase space Chern insulator is still there, it must have a phase space response theory with this ADADA. You have to reproduce that. And then you have to have non-trivial level there. And this level should be computed by Green's function in this way. And then the Green's function can produce this kink of the level must change across this so-called Fermi surface. But the level can only change in this integration by a singularity. So it either have a singularity in G or a singularity in G inverse. So it either goes through a pole, which is a singularity in G, you can change this level, or you can go through a zero of the Green's function where you can change the level as well, because that's also a singularity in this integration. So given that if you have a Fermi surface SMG, fermions are already gapped, there's no pole on the Fermi surface, zero is the only solution. So that's why. Yeah, I think at least in the, if you consider self-energy correction at that level, at perturbative level, it's also true. Yeah.
Yizhuan, so when you say the structure of the zero surface is robust, when you say the interaction scale is much smaller than the bulk chain insulator gap.
Yeah.
Are you basically saying that you're assuming the interaction is much smaller than the Fermi energy?
Yeah.
But in that region, shouldn't I always get a Fermi liquid anyway?
Uh-huh. Yeah, so it should be larger than the, yeah.
If it's larger than the Fermi.
Yeah, actually we don't really know how to describe this bulk mass, right? I haven't been able to relate that to Hopping, for example.
Why do you say it's smaller than the Fermi energy? Sorry, which part of the statement?
You say that if the interaction is smaller than the Fermi energy,
if it's much smaller.
Because then the Hopping is much bigger than the interaction.
I mean, that's like a short-range interaction near the Fermi surface. That's like that. That's just Landau. That's the regime where Landau Fermi liquid applies.
Yeah.
SMG, isn't it?
It's not a perturbative effect. SMG is a non-perturbative. You need to have a finite strength, and this critical point is expected to be of order one.
Yeah, but you need to be sort of perturbative to argue that the Luttinger surface somehow survives at zero.
Yeah.
So isn't there some tension potential gain?
Most likely, there's an intermediate phase in the electron hole pockets or something, which is still a semi-level, and then they shrink to zero.
Yeah, it's possible. Yeah, but at least when we do this calculation, it seems that we are in the very strong interacting limit, and then treat. I think the reason is that we are still using the previous Hopping term as perturbation. So from there, the technically from there, the information enters this zero structure. So I think to Sansik's question, yes, you may perturb it by another Hopping, then you can have another zero structure. But it turns out the zero structure you computed in this strong coupling limit is closely tied to solving the band structure problem in the original free fermion limit. So there's a kind of a duality there that relates the original pole shape to the zero shape, which is still very mysterious to us. Yeah, we tried to come up with this phase-based topological argument. I think that may be valid at some limit, but that's one argument that makes me feel better. Okay, so yeah, I agree there's still many mysteries, and I think our approach is still very much on the free fermion side, and then how to dip better into the non-Fermi liquid regime. I think it's still a open question in this phase space formulation. But as a summary, I try to say that we try to come up with a classification of Fermi surface anomaly. The general statement is that the co-dimension P Fermi surface anomaly of a symmetry group G is classified by G symmetric interacting fermion SPT states in P-dimensional space-time. So there's a correspondence between these dimensions. And if the anomaly is free, then you can allow phenomena like Fermi surface symmetric mass generation, and it can have potential application to pseudo-gap physics, and it has spectral signatures. Hopefully, we have a robust spectral signatures in certain range of interactions that you can see Green's function zeros, and there's a future questions like, can we even go do more and matching the Fermi surface anomaly by topological order. I think that those are interesting questions to explore in the future. So with that, thank you for your attention. Okay.
More questions? Go ahead.
Two questions. First of all, like the picture that you drew, like the intersecting of lingual authority,
yeah.
Because that seems to be able, like you're able to generalize that. The case where the real space dimension and the momentum space dimension are different.
Yes.
Like thinking about the Fermi arc.
Yeah.
The real space dimension is one, and the momentum space dimension is two. So
okay.
But you do get, like, what's an arc, right? So
okay. I think so. I haven't done this kind of calculation, but similar idea is applicable, I believe. Yeah.
But now the question is like the topological response. Usually, we write down like transcendence theory, which you can only do in five dimensions. But in this case,
that I don't know. Yeah. Yeah, it's this possible if it is like an even dimension, maybe. Yeah.
Typically, for even co-dimension Fermi surface, you need some extra symmetry like time reversal.
Yeah, that's right.
And
yeah.
Then once you have that, you can have non-trivial topological response.
Yeah.
Like maybe you'd be interested to look at like U1 subsystems.
Oh.
Would you expect what would happen?
You mean subsystem symmetry maybe in the real space?
Yeah, in real space, for example.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's very good question, and I even want to think about it more generally, because in the momentum space there's also a subsystem symmetry which corresponds to translation symmetry. So maybe it's good to consider this multipolar symmetry in both real space and momentum space in a unified framework and try to generalize that along those directions.
Yes.
Yeah.
Also, like in general,
So I have a question. So for this Z4 case, can you, I presume this phase-based magnetic field cannot make much sense because it's Z4, you can't put in a uniform magnetic field strength.
Right.
Is that another reason to say you should do this negative dimension thing? It's better for Z4?
Yeah, so all our argument is trying to provide a framework to do classification, but not to answer any dynamical question.
Right.
So what you are asking is more like, can you use this picture to on the dynamical level? Maybe that's difficult. But for classification purpose, this is a way to convince ourselves that this maps to a 0+1D classification problem. Then you use the non-perturbative classification scheme there to do the classification. And then you benchmark that with lattice model to show that the classification makes sense. I think that's all we can do. How to use our scheme as a way to answer dynamical question, I think, is still very challenging.
I'm still puzzled by the statement that all the nucleus of matter zeros is not changing at all. That there's even though error suppressed by something total EM.
I think eventually to higher order it can change. First of all, the shape can change, even maybe the volume can change. I think zero is not that robust as we.
Later your argument seems to be, I understand your alternative argument is that if I consider the thing which will be described, well described by the effective thing that you propose, then it seems okay, but this effective theory itself has a unit cutoff. It's only really valid when the CR is much lower than the unit cutoff, which means when the unit cutoff is finite, there's always some correction that's suppressed by some energy scale divided by the unit cutoff to some power. So generically, I wouldn't expect to be really complex.
Okay. You mean the volume is very fragile? It can change maybe, or
most things can change.
But I feel there's still this Luttinger theorem, right? There's a bulk ADA response which relates the volume in the momentum space with the charge density in the real space. And if you're not changing the charge density, you probably can't change the volume there. But the volume, if without the pole, it should be realized. Fermi volume should be realized by zeros. So I would suppose volume is more robust than the shape, as long as you don't change the charge density. So probably you are saying it only applies near the transition where the emergent anomaly is still approximately. Emergent symmetry is approximate.
Maybe a bit more two regions where the emergent anomaly dispersions are valid.
Uh-huh.
Which maybe not just near the transition, but maybe in the of course in the perpendicular side it's applicable. And maybe close to the transition. It's applicable up to some values.
Maybe the transition point doesn't have LU1. We don't know.
Yeah, the synthetic dimension is universally defined as the dimension in which the interaction is non-local. So parameter dimension is like that. Momentum dimension is also like that. So they are both synthetic dimensions.
You said momentum dimensions are the dimensions where interactions can be non-local, but how do I know which dimensions are those dimensions? Not an independent interaction.
Yeah, but that depends on the, because interaction matters when you talk about classification. If you use a different interaction, which is even local in the momentum space, the classification should change. Yeah, so we are doing the classification under the normal setup that interaction is assumed to be local in the real space and non-local in the momentum space. Under that assumption, the classification is like this. You should count the dimension in this way. Yeah, but if you give me a very weird interaction, then I should redo all the calculations. Yeah.
So for Coulomb interaction, what's your role?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. Yeah, that's very subtle. Yeah. Okay.
All right. Yeah, let's thank Yizhong again.
Thank you.